On February 4th, The Minds of Madness is set to release an investigative four-part series centered on a cold case from nearly four decades ago.
At first, it was just, my mom's gone. And then it became, you know, your mom was taken by a bad man.
They found video of him killing women.
If you'd ever watched any episodes of Breaking Bad, that's exactly what you would see.
He buried these 11 women and kept going out there. He made a road going out there.
You got this dude saying, hey, I'm going to show your family these pictures. And, like, he's secretly taping her.
The cops don't care. We're nothing to them.
They dumped her like a piece of garbage, you know?
I don't see anything that screams there's two people doing this.
I never thought anything was going to come of this case. Ever.
Listen to the Minds of Madness series, Who Killed Jennifer, starting February 4th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ahoy, mateys! Welcome aboard episode 5 of Murder Savvy Podcast. Did you hear that? I got an ad. If you have not listened to the Minds of Madness podcast, go forth and do the needful and listen to it now. And then once you're all caught up, or you know what, simultaneously, listen to Who Killed Jennifer, because it's out now. I'm definitely going to give it a listen now that I'm a little bit ahead of schedule, although I've been pretty far behind schedule. Bear with me. I'm still learning as I go. I'm definitely learning how to slow down my speech. And I'm sure I'll find a happy medium somewhere down the line, but I definitely try to speak quickly enough to keep up with my thoughts. Otherwise, I start to trip up on my words and my thoughts start to pile up and I just get frustrated. They go about a mile a minute up in here, and it's kind of a wild game to play sometimes. All right. I would like to start off with the scheduling. New episodes will be available wherever you plunder your content on Tuesdays. I've decided. Savvy Tuesdays is what you're going to look out for. Also need to learn how to sit still when recording. It's really not something I've been particularly excellent at this past year or so. Didn't really want to stay indoors any longer. But the month of January of 2024 has been quite a wild ride so far. I mean, of no fault of anybody's. It's just circumstances, and it's absolutely sneezing season. All right, hopefully I'm not making too much noise by bumping the table. I'm currently in the process of moving my studio over to my folks' place while I take care of their house, as well as my own. I'll just go back and forth while they go out west to look after my brother and his family because they are battling fallen trees from an ice storm. So I'm gonna hold down the fort while they go help hold down that fort, and everyone's forts are being held down, hopefully. Let's see, where should I even start with filling you in on the craziness? Oh, I know. Why don't we start with New Year's Eve? Where a lot of people start. Or stop. Oh, that was dark. All right, New Year's Eve. I went to my neighbor's house for a little shindig. Nothing too wild, except at some point, somebody started passing around those little shooter bottles of Fireball. And I had never had it before, So I just assumed that it was just like cinnamon liqueur. But no, I thought it was, that one stuff. What is that stuff I drank in high school? It has like a counterpart that is blue. Oh, Hot 100. So I ended up having, I don't know, one or two of those. And that's when I discovered I may have a slight addiction to hint of lime tortilla chips. I don't know how this happened. No, I do know how it happened. I do. And it was done without a single drop of rum because I drink gin. And that's how that happened. I just ate my weight in hint of lime tortilla chips until like the corners of my mouth were like raw pretty much, which has been a nightmare in and of itself. The climate around here behaves a lot like the Yukon, I guess. It's really cold, it's really dry. So like every morning I'll wake up and like yawn and it just like it tears my mouth. It just tugs at the lime chip injuries. Not to mention, I have battled acne my entire life, pretty much. Not my entire life, but you know what I mean. I ended up having to go to the doctor, and like I could have been on an episode of Dr. Pimple Popper because they had to cut a zit out of my lip. And I'm just like, wow, that's crazy. And oddly enough, my father was also like battling some sort of weird skin issue like at the same time. It's very odd. I don't live with my parents. We don't have like the same regimens of any kind. So he and I have been going to all these appointments and getting all these tests like separately and then getting together later and like comparing notes. Like, did you have this done? Yeah. Did you have this done? No. Are you taking this medication? Yeah. Are you taking this medication? No. So I'm going to go ahead and try that really intensive acne treatment called Accutane, which I'm all for it because I asked for it 10 years ago. It is just very heavy on the self-esteem having to deal with hormonal cystic acne that, you know, pretty much guided my life. Is what it is. I'm taking care of it now. That's all I can ask for. But before I can start that, I have to do a bunch of other tests. So it's just a big rigmarole, but it's fine. It's in motion. It's happening. I'm excited about it. After or during all of that with my lip and the acne and everything like that, I ended up with like a really bad sinus infection that really affected my eyes and like my right ear. So I couldn't hear anything. It was crazy. It was so not good. I have never been that sick in my life. And every once in a while, I can still like feel my ear click a little bit. And I feel like it has changed the way I speak. Because for the first time in my life, I lost my voice for 3 days. I do not know how to tell you this, but I literally felt like my superpower had just been ripped away. I've never in my life just been nothing but air. I didn't like it. I didn't like that one bit. I've never been soft-spoken in my life. I do what I can. I try to watch my tone, but, you know, we're all human. We are who we are. As long as I'm not hurting anybody or myself, then we'll come to an understanding. I'm sure of it. So, after I was over the illness, but still suffering from severe cabin fever, I decided I was going to go out to dinner. And I had a really nice dinner. The food was awesome. Drinks were good too. And then I went to the bathroom. And I took one step inside that bathroom and just immediately slipped. I could see my feet flying in the air before my ass even hit the floor. Like, it was freaking comical. I mean, it could have been a banana peel for all I know. I'm pretty sure it was soap because it happened so fast. I body slammed myself right on my tailbone. And I just kind of laid there for a minute, like had myself up on my elbows, but my legs were straight out in front of me. Like I didn't feel anything for a second. So I was like, oh no, is this how it ends? But yeah, I gained my composure pretty quick and just, I didn't say anything to anyone. Walked out like nothing happened. I didn't even go to the bathroom because at that point, oh my God, don't think I could have even tried. Yoga helps a lot. Moving around some more, stretching as much as I can. Holy crap, it still hurts. So you should know that I am very accident prone. It's a thing. Everybody knows. It has been quite the challenge to build a whole new routine when you're not exactly sure what you're doing yet. I'm at a point where I think I have the ability to just kind of open up with my authentic self. So I'd like to try to expand my comfort zone by dropping the act, going off script some more, and like learning how to banter with myself as I go, kind of. I don't actually get paid for this. I do have a day job, and it's been a little more demanding lately, which has been super unusual and unforeseen. So please don't think I'm ever marooning you. I'm settling in. I'm finding my groove. Absolutely nothing has gone according to plan yet, but that's okay. I'm not too worried about it. I kind of like to think of this podcast as my metaphorical broken compass, a passion I didn't know I had until the opportunity presented itself. I have no idea what I'm doing. I've never been my own boss before, but I know I have a message and a pretty big voice to send it with. So why on earth would I even be doing this if I didn't? But it's kind of nice that I did find another purpose for it other than getting the party started and keeping it going. Like, it's kind of funny that my wild Friday nights these days are, you know, taking one too many or two too many fireball shots when I used to do some sketchy shit in Miami. I don't know. Times are changing. I have grown up, believe it or not. But like, oddly enough, I'm also new to working the day shifts. I used to work a graveyard shift, which were 12-hour shifts for 3 nights a week. So it was pretty sweet. And I have no idea how y'all live the daywalker life. And huge kudos to those of you who are parents or guardians or leaders of any kind. Like, on top of having your own wants and needs, hopes and dreams. Man. Being part of the real world totally sucks. So here I am, back in fantasy land. For me, it's easy to fall back on anxiety and fear. I mean, it is human nature because it keeps us safe. But I thought I was playing it safe, and look where that got me. I can tell myself to let go of the fear until I'm blue in the face. But it's definitely easier said than done. Like, I can't help but consider, even for a second, that my inner bully and all those people from the past might be right. Maybe I'm not cut out for showbiz. Nay, I say it's time to practice gratitude over attitude. I can't help but be grateful for the times that I felt lost because it led me to try new things that I never thought I'd do. I just know I have a lot to say. Deep down, I've always kind of wondered if I might actually have something to offer the world. And I think I've finally found not only what it is, but also the outlet I needed. I tend to be the type of character that strangers seem to just tell things to, which I love, don't get me wrong. I'll just be standing there in the grocery store checkout line and some grandma lady tell me all about her life story. And it's fun. And I love learning those things. And then I look around when I have something to say and I don't really find anyone that says safe bet written across their forehead. Like it seems so many find in me. And when I do try to say something, I've realized I either attract a tougher crowd that I really no longer relate to, or I just like enrage people. And why? Why is that? I don't know. I think the answer is simple. Curiosity. My opinions and ideas matter to me. I'm no longer willing to shrink my abundant energy just to make others feel more comfortable when I really have never felt comfortable in this world. I am slowly but surely stepping into my power like I've been preaching to my choir all these years. Am I excellent at taking my own advice? No, absolutely not. However, I can learn how. The more I grow, the more you'll know, you know? I had a very short-sighted plan for this long ago because I had a lot of fun doing this, but I had to let it go for a while, put it on the back burner, if you will. So I was just mentally, physically, emotionally, just checked the fuck out. And that happens sometimes. It happens to a lot of us. And I think for the lot of us that are still standing here today, I think we all have something to offer the world. If you find any of this sounding familiar to you, do what you can. Because you can absolutely do it. Because I know that if I can eat my entire life savings away in lime chips, and if I can tough out acne for more than half my life and still show my face to the world on a daily basis, if I can fall on my ass all alone and stand back up and laugh it off and act like it never happened, it's like that. You just keep going, you keep growing, and you're gonna know. And that's entirely what and how and why this next story inspired the hell out of me. I mean, it really lit the fire under my ass, if it wasn't already burning from falling on it. So, I pretty much am just rehashing a documentary that I watched. And it is a very good documentary, and I suggest watch it if you can. Do your eyes ever play tricks on you? Say when you're driving down the street or along a narrow road, and all of a sudden you think you saw something that wasn't really there? Or maybe it's just the utmost wishful thinking that you didn't just see what you thought you saw. What if it did turn out to be a circumstance which would bring nightmares to most? Would you let it haunt your dreams? Or would you embrace it as a lesson which guides you to a new road, a new fate? Today we are examining a horribly glorifying survivor story that altered the course and perspectives of the lives in the wake of what medical professionals can only describe as a miracle. We will be taking a lot of left turns on this particular road. Be prepared, but be hopeful, and hold on to your heads, gents. This is the story of Alice and Botha. I really just need to get past like the worst part, and then I'll be fine. Like, what is the worst part? They're all bad. Oh yeah, I gotta sit still. Oops. The time and place of our story begins in the summer of 1994 in Port Elizabeth of South Africa, when 27-year-old Alison Botha arrived at her flat, I believe is what they would say. And just as she put her car in park, suddenly there was a knife to her throat, which was attached to a man. And the man said, "Move, or I'll kill you." And of course, scared out of her mind, I can't even imagine, Alison did what she was told. As you should. We've all watched Zombieland. Don't be a hero. So she slid over to the passenger seat, and the man that was attached to the arm that was holding the knife now had control of the vehicle, and he began driving. They drove around for a while when the man began speaking to her. He asked her questions like her name, where she's from, and then he said he wasn't going to hurt her and asked if she had a boyfriend. And Alison stated that this gave her a false sense of security, where she felt a little more trusting. She didn't feel as though her life was directly on the line. That was until the man stopped at a local gas station where another man entered the backseat of Allison's car. The two men exchanged pleasantries and they began driving off again. Allison caught a glimpse of the man they had just picked up when she looked in the rearview mirror, and that's when their eyes met. And that's when Allison knew she was looking at someone who was out of their goddamn mind. And Allison stated that that is when she knew that she was not going to be making it home that night. Allison was definitely putting on a brave face on the outside, but on the inside, she was certain that she was going to be killed. The longer they drove, the more scared she became. She didn't want them to know that she was scared, and for good reasons. Eventually, they arrived at some outdoor gravel pit in the middle of seemingly nowhere. Allison did not recognize the location whatsoever. Once her vehicle was placed in park, the man who had abducted her at knife point ordered her to the back seat. And the two men exit the vehicle and they have a very brief conversation. And that's when the man with the knife entered the back seat with Allison. And he began to rape her, all the while telling her that she's a pretty girl, and as long as she's good, he won't hurt her. Clearly, there were no good intentions here. They were going to hurt her. But Allison did have the wherewithal to pay attention to her surroundings and what the men were saying to each other. I couldn't even imagine being in such a state and thinking to think about a way out. Allison was paying attention. She was fully aware of what was happening to her, but also paying attention enough to try to make herself an escape plan, which is incredible. I don't have a better way to describe this than Allison herself. But she states that her body reacting to being raped was probably the worst part. It wasn't really about other people causing her harm. It was that her body reacted to such harm, even though it is absolutely a survival mechanism within our internal instincts. But she ate herself up about it at the time. She was paying enough attention that when the man who was raping her hollered to his friend to see if he wanted a turn, the man used his name. And the man's name was Tiens. I don't know how to spell it. That is the worst name I think I've ever heard ever in my life. Tiens is like the South African version of the name Cletus. Like, it's just so bad. Why? Tiens, Cletus. They both sound like very, like what you would call someone if you were to use like an insult of anatomy. That's my thoughts on the name, but anyway. And Tien said back to the man, "Franz, get out and let me have my way with her." So now she knew the names of the men who were attacking her. So Franz and Tien's, honestly, I hate that name. Anyway, Tien's then entered the backseat, and the last thing Allison remembered were his hands wrapping around her throat. Then everything faded to black. Allison then suddenly awoke with a jolt of excruciating pain. Immediately upon opening her eyes, she was met with Tien's awful, deranged, demonic, horrific glare. And there was blood splattered across his face. She then realized that he was stabbing her in the stomach over and over again. The stabbing suddenly stopped. The voices were very muffled. And then suddenly Franz had the knife and he began stabbing her over and over and over again. But this time he was stabbing her in the neck. Tien's then let out a battle cry, if you will, and pushed Franz out of the way, again grabbing the knife and continuing to stab and slice and cut Allison over and over and over again. I'm sure she didn't expect any of it to stop, but it did. The stabbing, the slicing, it stopped. At this point, she was going in and out of consciousness. It was the taillights shrinking in the distance that caught Allison's attention. And then everything just went quiet. Allison says there was no noise and there was no pain. She just lied there. But then suddenly, she heard something awful. And she realized she was making that noise. And that's when Allison says she realized that she was going to die from the wound to her neck. And she could actually tell that the sound was coming from that wound. And as she lay dying, the awful noise faded almost faster than the taillights themselves. And she was suddenly floating above her body, feeling as though she could let go. But then she looked closer at her blood-drenched body and decided she didn't really want to let go. So she didn't. Allison says she was suddenly slammed back into her body. And that awful, gurgling, suffocating sound was back. And she remembered everything. And there was no way she was going to let them get away with raping and butchering her. As much as it hurt to even move, she lifted her finger and wrote the names of the men who so viciously attacked her in the sand next to her body, so that at the very least, when her body was found, the names of the men who did this would also be found with her. When Allison rolled back onto her back, that's when she felt a suspicious weight on her legs. And that was the moment she realized that she had been completely disemboweled. Enraged at this point, she looked back over to the names she had just scrawled into the sand, where she just so happened to find her button-up blouse that was ripped off of her body just before the attack. And it was just within arm's reach, so she was able to use this as a mesh to hold her intestines at least upright and next to her body, rather than down on her legs where she found them. It was at this point that Allison states that it felt as though she was lifted to her feet. But in doing so, she first saw the trees, then the tops of the trees, then the sky, then more of the sky. Then suddenly the tops of the trees behind her, only they were upside down. And then suddenly she was looking all the way behind her upside down. And that's when she realized that her head had just fallen all the way back and was now resting between her shoulder blades. So, with the hand that wasn't holding her intestines, she reached back and grabbed the top of her head and used her hair to pull her head back up and held it in place and began to step forward. Allison says she only remembers taking that very first step. And after that, it was like she was floating, like someone else was moving her feet. She does not know how long she was walking. Finally, she found a road. Then she just collapsed. She doesn't know how long she was laying there. A vehicle approached, and her first thought wasn't, "Finally, there's help." It was, "Oh no, what if it's them?" Could you imagine going through all of that, and instead of feeling hopeful, your first thought's going to be the worst thought after going through something like that? I couldn't even imagine. But this car didn't stop. They probably thought they were seeing something from a horror movie. And so Allison began to close her eyes when a second vehicle approached. And this vehicle did stop. Tyann Eilard was the passenger of the vehicle, and when Tyann approached the woman, he was shocked. He could not believe what he was seeing. And he asked her what her name was, and she said Allison. And he said, "I'm Tyann. We're going to get you help." He hollered to his friend to grab a blanket, which they then covered Allison with. And Tyann lied down next to her on the road and held her hand until emergency services arrived. Over 50 minutes later. So he laid there with her and made sure that she was still conscious and talking to him, knowing full extent of what her injuries were. And I'm pretty sure Allison was well aware of what they were as well. And in the documentary, Tyann actually makes a comment that he was rather upset with the paramedics because they acted as though she was already dead when he had been with her the entire time and knew that she had something in her that was gonna maybe get her through it. This incident actually changed the course of his life forever, and he went on to become a medical doctor himself. So that even if there's a chance of saving someone, he would be able to take it, just like he had with Allison. When Allison arrived at hospital, the doctors, they could not believe what they were seeing. The extent of her injuries, let alone that she was still conscious and able to communicate with them. It had to be pen and paper because she was no longer able to speak, because Allison's trachea had been completely severed. However, her jugular veins were just narrowly missed, which meant she did not bleed out from this injury. The number of stab wounds to her neck were upwards of 20. And there were also stab wounds on her chest that just missed her heart and her main arteries. It turns out these two deranged men had nearly cut Allison's head off, but just above the collarbones, and that's how she didn't bleed out. After examining the neck wound, the emergency room surgeons then began examining the wounds to her stomach, and it was confirmed that she was completely disemboweled. And not only was she disemboweled, but the doctors were pretty certain that Allison would not be able to bear children in her life, due to the extent of the injuries. So the team of doctors come up with a plan, and they relay the plan to Allison, and Allison is sitting before them, nearly decapitated and disemboweled, and sign the consent forms to have her body put back together, like goddamn Frankenstein. Not only did she sign the consent forms, but she also wrote her mother's phone number underneath. It's so wild. The injury to her abdomen was probably the worst that any of these doctors had ever seen. I don't know how common of practice it is to put someone's entire intestines back together, or back in. You know, not only do you have to put them back where they belong, she was also in the dirt and in the sand. So it was filthy. And I can't imagine how filthy it is without the dirt on it. And so they meticulously scrubbed every inch, every bump, every lump, and placed it back within her body according to plan. But of course, this would be extensive recovery. I mean, almost daily visits to have the dressings of her wounds cleaned. And painful. I'm sure it was just excruciating pain. But luckily, they missed all the vital organs, none of the intestines were actually stabbed themselves, and both surgeries were successful. Not even 24 hours later, investigators arrived at the emergency room and told the medical staff that it would be beneficial to the case if Allison could verbally state the names of the men who attacked her, even though she had already written their names in the sand next to her body as she lay dying, even though she had already written it down on the medical forms. They still wanted her to verbally say it. Is that a South African thing? Would that happen in America? I really want to know. I'm concerned. Anyway, so the doctors go to Allison and they say, listen, there could be complications if we try to take the tube out, because she just had her trachea repaired. So she had a breathing tube in so that the sutures could heal themselves. And one wrong move and the sutures come out and she's back in surgery. She won't be able to say the names anyway. But Allison wrote down with a pen and paper, take it out. And luckily, this was successful too. And pretty much as soon as it was out of her mouth, she said, oh, that's better. So, and now, just 6 months after the attack, the trial begins. During the trial, it was discovered that Franz and Tientz had abducted and raped two other women in the area, both of which they let go, but told them that if they told the police that they would kill them. Both of which told the police, because how about no? Go to therapy, get yourself some help, instead of taking it out on others and then telling them not to tell when you're the one who did something to them. Cowards. As weird as this is, even though Tientz was the more deranged looking one to Allison, it was Franz who did like a bunch of weird stuff during the trial and while he was in jail. Of course, he claimed to be a Satanist and requested an exorcism because he was, quote, possessed by the devil. And this is something that is like automatically granted in South African prisons. So, that's weird. If I were a South African priest, I would be like, then it's probably a good thing you're in that little hole in the wall there. That's where you belong. You should just stay there. We don't have to do any of this. Jesus doesn't want you, clearly. So this is just 6 months into Allison's healing journey. So she is asked to go to the police station to visually identify her assailants. As if writing the names down while she's dying, as if writing it down at the hospital, as if being told to go against medical advice in order to verbally state who attacked her, she now has to spend moments, of course, behind a one-way looking glass, but doesn't matter. She had to spend moments looking in their eyes. That's too much to be asking, honestly. And she identified them as number 6 and number 13 in the lineup. And she was done. She said she was in the room for approximately 12 seconds. But every second was just too long. They were both found guilty for rape and attempted murder. And the judge providing over this case actually wrote like a special note for both men that they should never see the light of day because they will try this again. They have no remorse for what they've done, nor the people they've done it to. They were both found guilty and sentenced to 3 life sentences with the possibility of parole. Allison states that she didn't have much of a plan in life before the attack, but after which she found her purpose. And she began venturing around, giving motivational speeches about her attack, about how she recovered, and about how she overcame. She created an acronym, which is the ABC, and I love it. I'm going with it. So A stands for attitude, and the B stands for belief, and C stands for choice. So you encounter something, and it's up to you what your attitude is going to be about it. It's up to you what your belief is going to be about it. And it's up to you what you decide to do with all of those things. Allison also began writing her own books about her story and the ability to overcome the greatest hardships. And when Franz, the one who seemed a little nicer, found out about all of this, he wrote letters to Allison's editors and the videographers, stating that he would agree to an interview that he was never asked for in exchange for a letter of forgiveness from Allison to Franz. He also asked for money from Allison's books and speeches and documentaries because, quote, if he hadn't done what he did to her, she wouldn't even have a success story. So that judge was right. These two should never see the light of day. But it is very unfortunate that both men have been released on parole as of June 2023. And Allison, again, was sent into a very deep depression and struggled greatly when she found out about this. But she intends on using her ABCs, especially because 2 other miracles in the form of 2 squishy babies also came out of this story. And Allison, I guess. So even though she was told over and over again that she probably wouldn't be bearing children, she ended up having 2 baby boys who are now probably adults now. I don't know how old they are. Both pregnancies were very healthy. She enjoyed being pregnant. She enjoys her boys. And so she is now focused on being a mother and trying her best to inspire anyone around her that no matter what you've been through, somebody has probably been through worse. God, how am I gonna end this? So if you don't think that you can withstand a mild addiction to tortilla chips, falling on your ass, and a butt pimple the size of Jupiter, I'm gonna go ahead and bet otherwise. All right, guys. Don't forget to leave a review and tune in next week for another wild tale.